First of all, Paul says God's idea of the perfect family is one in which the marriage relationship has been changed by the gospel. We can see this very clearly by the distinct instructions Paul gives to wives and husbands in verses 18 and 19. First, in verse 18, he tells the wives to be subject to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Now, this is not something that all the ancient world had household codes, just like the world does today. But this is not what those wives would have been told. A little similar, but very distinct. So we need to pay attention, give attention to what Paul says here. So first of all, be subject. The verb be subject translates a Greek term that means to be under the arrangement of, come under the arrangement of. And it was very commonly used in the military context where a commander would arrange his troops. Y'all go here, y'all go here. Very much an order situation here. So this command, you could say very clearly, makes Paul patriarchal. Or you might say he very clearly puts the will of the husband above the will of the wife in the leadership of the home and of the children. However, there is some nuance here that we must pay attention to that makes it distinct. First, he uses the middle voice in this verb. Now, the middle voice means the subject is acting on itself. So the subject and object of the verb are identical. So that means he's calling on the wife to submit herself. So this would be something that's voluntary. And that's worth noticing because in my so far 17 years, a couple of times I've noticed so far the damage that can be done when there's a certain patriarchal view of the home, where the wife is compelled to obey against her will. I saw one situation where an adoption took place and the wife was not on board and the husband imposed the will, and it resulted in a lot of damage. So it's good here to notice a Christian marriage is not a Muslim marriage. It's not just a column of power all the way down. But the husband should be concerned that his wife is from the heart submitting to him, trusting in the Lord in her, like Sarah. She hoped in God and called Abram Lord. There's another nuance here. We're not done, though. So it's to be done willingly if we factor in the voice. But he also says, wives, be subject to your husbands. Ephesians uses the word your own husband. So it's also good today to notice with the resurgence of patriarchalism in Reformed congregations that wives are not told to submit to all men in this way. It's a very special relationship to one man, her husband. And so that can cause damage. Sometimes women have wonderful ideas, and they do need to be shared. They need some kind of avenue to share them. And they're not children. They're not on the level of children. So this needs to be emphasized, that the wife is not to feel like she can't share anything with in any context whatsoever. I'm not wanting to promote obnoxiousness, but just that women need to be able to share their ideas with their husbands. And they don't need to think they're defying universal masculinity by not submitting to all men in a special way. It's a very special relationship to the husband the Lord's called her to. And finally, Paul says, as is fitting in the Lord, which translates a term that means up to the standard. So we say that, right? We have standards, or you know what the standard is. So this was their term for the standard, for rising up to a standard. So we could just lay this down, that a voluntary, submissive relationship with one man is the standard for the Christian wife. But it's not just because of what Paul says to the wives that we know the marriage relationship is to be distinctly changed by the gospel, but what he says to the husbands. In verse 19, husbands, love your wives and do not be embittered against them. Again, husbands in the ancient world would have been told something, but not this. This is unique. In the time we have, let me just sum up love in the Bible, of course, and in the more extended version of this in Ephesians, will mean willing self-sacrifice for the good of the other. G.K. Chesterton has a quote about Rome where he says in Orthodoxy, they did not love Rome because she was beautiful. She became beautiful because they loved her. And you see that in Ephesians. Husbands, we all would like for the wife to just come in full form, but God has called us to play the role in forming her into the best version of herself. And so she is to become more beautiful over time, morally, ethically, toward the Lord as a Christian woman as a result of us pouring our life out for them. And then notice also it's your wives. So the husband also, it's a very distinct relationship. That's something to lay hold of. There's only one person on the earth that you have this relationship with and that God thinks is a special relationship and calls you to treat that way. And so the final nuance is, of course, Paul says, do not be embittered against them. And that's where it shines. Husbands in the ancient world weren't told this. So this word means sharp and pointed, vitriolic words and actions, which are definitely the opposite of love. So we could say what Paul calls for Christian husbands is voluntary sacrificial love for one woman. That's the standard for Christian husbands. So for those two reasons, I say the first thing we see here is the marriage relationship is to be changed by the gospel. That's God's idea of a perfect family. Second, it's not only that the marriage relationship would be changed in the household, because Paul goes on to address the parentage relationship being changed. And we can see this by the distinctive instructions he gives to children and to fathers in verses 20 to 21. So verse 20, children, be obedient to your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Again, children in ancient world weren't given this exact instruction. So we need to pay attention to this. So if you're a child here and you can hear and follow along, this part of the sermon from Paul is for you. Be obedient is hupakuo in the Greek. We get acoustics from that root, and hupo means under. So to be obedient literally means to come up under the sound. And the sound would be coming from the parent's voice. So it's not hard to see if a child is obedient or disobedient. Father gives a word. If you do that, children, Paul classifies you as obedient. If you don't do that, then he classifies you as disobedient. It means to come under the sound of the father's word. And then the mother, because he says to your parents. So here... Children, you have a special relationship with only two people. I hope you have wonderful grandparents and great-grandparents and church family, but your special relationship is to your father and mother. And Paul also goes on to stress all things. That means there's no limit to the parents' authority. They've done no wrong to anyone. If the father steps in at any moment and says, "I don't want, you know, my children staying here," or "I don't want them here anymore. I want to move them there." There needs to be a sense in, like that parable, he's only done something with what is his own. He's operating in his full authority under God. So there's no limits. But here's where it's distinct, right? Paul says, because this is well-pleasing in the Lord. That's the distinctive. Children in the ancient world were instructed to please other gods. Children in the ancient world, some of them were instructed to please no God, or to just please daddy because daddy said so. He basically functions as God. He's the ultimate authority. But we see here, which is amazing to me, Paul is implying that children are to be instructed to live for the Lord as soon as they can be instructed. And not just whenever they're being evangelized, per se, where maybe you're distinctly calling them to believe the gospel at those moments. No, all moments they're to be told to live a certain way, to adopt the Christian worldview, and the reason they're to be given is because they're to live to please the Lord. So at all times, we should be addressing them this way, not just sometimes. Now, it's not only just because of what he says to the children, though, that the parentage relationship has changed. Look what he says to fathers. Paul tells fathers in verse 21, "Do not exasperate your children so that they will not lose heart." Again, fathers in the ancient world weren't told this. Fathers in the ancient world literally had the right to kill their children if they didn't want them when they were born, which incidentally, there's a version of that still today. But literally after birth, they had this right. It was legal. Children in the ancient world had no hope of any kind of dealing with injustice, or no one in the community basically cared if a father mistreated a child. So this is where Christianity is really changing the ancient world culture here, that now for the first time, fathers are concerned not to stir up their children to anger and resentment, with the result that they literally here lose spirit. So the idea is children have this potential, if dealt with in a certain way, heavy-handed, to despair that they could ever please this parent and to just completely lose heart in that way. And Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 13:11, that when he was a child, he reasoned like a child, spoke like a child, thought like a child. So it's good for us to remember that children are not adults. They think differently, they reason differently. And so the father, the Christian father, really has to be very attentive to every stage they're at along the way, to trying to play a role in forming them into a mature Christian saint. Just a couple practical things would be having way more yeses than nos, you know, in the home, where there's a sense that dad actually loves me and is not just thundering no's all the time. Spending time with them, which you have to do to correct something. You know, why does the proverb say if you don't discipline your child, you hate your child? Because discipline requires time, and that requires sacrifice. Paul told the Thessalonians that he had such a, in 1 Thessalonians 2, fond affection for them that he imparted to them not only the gospel of God, but his own life. So one Saturday, I was trying to think about how to illustrate this, and we were making cinnamon rolls. And, you know, the pack only has so much icing in it. And it's always a struggle. Which one of these gets more? Or do you kind of do the Bernie Sanders thing and everybody's equal? And so I was thinking about that, like the limitations, like our lives only have so many minutes in them, only so many hours, so many seconds. And you just really realize if some person spends time with you, that they're giving away some of their life to you. And that's kind of, we kind of get that. And we feel loved or not loved based on someone doing that. So a parent that, you know, child's acting a certain way and they really feel, no, mom and dad care about me so much that if this takes 30 minutes out of the day to deal with, it's going to take 30 minutes out of the day. We're going to deal with it. We're going to see it all the way through and persevere. And that's the difference of Jacob and Esau. God loved Jacob, hated Esau. And so, you know, he had Jacob crippled and everything. And Esau, he just let him go and let him out of the world and treated him like a bastard. And that's what Hebrews says, is that type of child. So just excessive rules, excessive punishments, you know, the anger that can get a hold to us as fathers, just as patiently, like the beautiful liturgy y'all have here, you know, the discipline and then remind them of the gospel, pray with them, give them a hug, it's over with, move on. That all takes time. And that's why some parents don't discipline their children. So for those two reasons, then, we can say Paul is very clearly teaching also God's idea of the perfect family means the parental relationship has been changed by the gospel. And then finally, which I can be the briefest on because it's extirpated from our culture, is God's idea of the perfect family is also one in which the bondage relationship has been changed by the gospel. And you can tell this by what he tells slaves and masters, verse 22 all the way to 4:1. Clearly, slaves in the ancient world were not told to in all things obey those who are your masters on earth, not with external service, as those who merely please men, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. And then to whatever you do, do your work heartily, as for the Lord rather than for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance. It is the Lord Christ whom you serve. For he who does wrong will receive the consequences of the wrong which he has done, and that without partiality. So slaves were not given those instructions. The ancient world is distinctly Christian. And also masters were not given these instructions. Grant to your slaves justice and fairness, knowing that you too have a master in heaven. So to wrap this up, like I said, we won't spend a lot of time on that one. So we're more focused on the marriage relationship and the parentage relationship. What have we seen this morning in this sermon? We've seen that although it's natural for our generation, just like any generation, to have some idea of what they think is the perfect family and to long for that to become a reality in their lives, that God, we've been reminded that God has an idea of the perfect family, and we've been reminded that this is the idea that we should long for to become a reality in our lives. And God's idea is very simply this. It's a family in which all the relationships have been changed by the gospel. So since I've been so brief with that last point, let me offer you three kind of applications to consider. One would be, I think we have to all ask ourselves this question to apply the text. Is the household to which we belong a Christian household? Well, this would not depend on whatever kind of Hobby Lobby artwork we have hanging on the walls. nor would it depend if we just simply claim to be Christians, nor would it necessarily depend on whether we're a member of a church or whether we've been baptized or whether everyone on social media thinks we're cool and reformed and up to date on, you know, the proper things, nor whether we've read a certain expert parenting book, nor whether we follow a certain counselor or psychologist. It doesn't even depend on whether we individually read our Bibles or not. It just depends on four simple questions. Number one, does the wife in this household strive to willingly submit her will and in support of the will and leadership of the husband? Does the husband in this household voluntarily, not bitterly, but gladly, just his whole life and his marriage is just a complete sacrifice in every way to promote the good of his wife, her physical good, as some of the prayer requests we heard were concerned with, her spiritual good, her theological knowledge, her life, the way she lives, her state of soul. Is she okay with the Lord? Is she walking with the Lord? How's her relationship? Like, husband should deeply care about that and tend to that and just oversee that, be aware of that, and always be making sure that's good. Do the children in this household, what's the ratio, you know, of the voice going out, children, and following your parents? You know, if it's pretty bad, then you see the result. Does the father in this household, is he bitter and snappy? Is he overly ruly? Or is this a glad-hearted father who's simply trying to bring loves his children so much, he's not going to allow them to be educated by the pagans. He's not going to allow them to not be disciplined. But he's also not heavy-handed. He loves them. He is there present. He has a presence in the home, and he's guiding their development. That's incredible to have. Not all men probably here have even had that growing up. So to the degree that the answers to those questions are yes, then yes, this is a Christian home, Paul would say. But to the degree that those answers are no, then we see where we need to change, because we need to hold to this idea that God's idea of a Christian household is one in which every relationship in there has been changed by the gospel. So let me challenge you with this. There's the illustration is sometimes told of you really nailed them this week, that the preacher was preaching in a big crowd like this and shaking everyone's hand when they left. And one guy comes up and says, "Boy, you really nailed them this week." And then the following Lord's Day is only like half the amount of people. And he said the same thing, "You really nailed them this week." And then the next Lord's Day, you know, COVID hit or something, and everybody, there's only a few people there that could come. And he still passed him on the way out. He said, "I sure am glad this is recorded live for everyone to see it, because you really nailed them this week." And so we all can have this tendency, right, to listen to a sermon and think of what everyone else needs to do. So let me just encourage you to not use up your attention that way. First of all, on how the other members of your household need to obey what Paul has said here, nor on how other families in your church need to change, nor even on, you know, use up all your energy on how the families in the nation need to change, because we can appear concerned about all these things while not doing them in our own home. So instead, focus your attention on how you can change your relationship in your family and do your gospel duty in your home. And the final thought to encourage you on that, perhaps, I just saw that statistic. I don't know if some of y'all did. Louisiana is like at the bottom on this new survey of people having of states where people have a biblical worldview. One of those may come out in a sermon like this. You hear a sermon like this, and you might think, it's kind of looking for something more powerful, something more spiritual, something more world impacting, you know. This just seems very unimpressive. Fathers, children, wives, husbands, masters, slaves. But use the human body for an analogy, perhaps. There are approximately 30 trillion cells that come together to produce the marvel of one human body. And there's not that many Christian homes in the United States. There's not even that many Christian homes in the world. So just consider the possibility of what could happen if every Christian home devoted the bulk of their attention to being this kind of a husband, this kind of a wife, this kind of a father, this kind of a child in that home. I would say we can only wonder what would happen to the world if we all did those gospel duties. All I know for sure is it would be far beyond what we could all ask or think what would happen. So a church is made up of strong families. A nation is made up of strong families. And if all of Christ is for all of life and we're going to redeem all things, the family has to be at the center of that, a very cellular approach. The negative world, pagans, would like to break us up into units and think of ourselves as individuals. But we Christians have to view ourselves, the fundamental unit is the family, and seek to redeem that. So may the Lord bless you all in that. And again, privilege is ours to be here and be worshiping with y'all today and receiving grace by being here. Amen.